morning. Welcome to the 2013, it says 2011, but 2013 Thanksgiving in the Park meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Jeff, and I am a compulsive overeater, absolutely. For those who wish to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Are there any other compulsive overeaters here besides myself? All right. Good. I am in the right place. The following is the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have asked David to read How It Works from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Good morning. I'm David. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic. How it works. Can you guys hear me? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought that we could find an easier, softer way. But we could not. With all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God and to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him for our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. All big books come up. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, We try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints.
What's the point?
The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principle we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the compulsive overeater, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our compulsive overeating. And C, that God could and would if he were so.
A prime example of us helping each other when we don't know what the hell we're doing. In honor of Thanksgiving holiday, we are reminded that of the many gifts this program has given us, including many big books, apparently. The following speakers will be sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us today. Each speaker will speak for 20 minutes, and our first speaker is Nancy D.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey. I'm excited. I was nervous a minute ago, but I got excited. When we were doing together the steps, it changed for me. I got excited. So, happy Thanksgiving. I am powerless over food. And I'm powerless over food. And sometimes my life becomes unmanageable. And I've been in program for a number of years. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah.
Closer to the mic? Okay. And if you can't hear me, if I drift, like, wave back there, and I'll know what you mean. Okay, I've been in program for a long time. I came in the late 80s. My abstinence date is April 13th, 1987. Might be before a couple of you were even born. But so, and when I walked in, I crawled in. I crawled in at over 300 pounds. I don't know exactly what I weighed because I didn't get on the scale very often at all. And I'd done all the things that were popular to do repeatedly, and every time they worked, and then every time I got off of whatever the diet was, you know, I gained all the weight back, plus the bonus pounds, a number of times. And in thinking about that, I was thinking about some of the wackadoo stuff I did, and some of us, I imagine some of you guys did too, before we came in, and I think the weirdest one was HCG, which in the 80s, it was medically prescribed, and it was pregnant women's urine. I am not making that up. To lose weight, it worked. I lost all the weight, gained it all back. But I thought that the last thing in the world I wanted to do was admit that I was powerless, because I thought that I should be stronger and more and try harder, and if I believed more or if I was just a better person, I didn't think that I should admit that I was powerless. It seemed like exactly the wrong thing to do to me. I mean, I was absolutely wrong about that, but I thought that that was the wrong thing to do, that if I was the right sort of individual, I would get it together and I would keep it together, and didn't happen. So how I came in specifically was my Eskimo, the person that got me in directly, was a friend of mine that was recovering in AA, and we were dear friends, and I saw him change. I saw him change. And I knew that I was just like he was about liquor, I was about muffins. Sincerely, I never saw the point of drinking. Why would I want to drink when I can have literally a muffin or ice cream sundae or something? And I am a hardcore, nasty sugar addict. That's me. As a matter of fact, I used to laugh. One of my jokes was, kind of a sick joke, was I always thought Thanksgiving was a little bit of a waste of time because I couldn't be bothered with the turkey and the dressing and all that so much because there wasn't enough room for pie if I spent too much time on the turkey and the dressing and stuff. So literally, I would just have a small serving of the turkey, and then I would sneak into the other room and I would sliver the pie because I wasn't upfront enough to just eat a big piece in front of you. No, that was... that was unseemly. So I would just sliver something to death in the other room. So, and when I remember one time, years before I came into the program, when I wanted to cut back and I wanted to stop eating so much, what I stopped doing was eating meals, and I just had dessert. Because if I had to cut back, I would just skip the meal and just go right to the... That's what my thinking does. Okay. So I came in, I crawled in 87, and you guys were talking right out loud about stuff people in my life did not talk about. I remember hearing somebody say that she was a garbage can eater, and I thought that meant that she went outside the back of the house and climbed into the trash bin and I got food back out of there and ate it. And then I heard somebody say they were a garbage can eater because they threw something away in the kitchen trash and then they fished it back out. And I said, oh, because I did that too. But I never heard anybody else admit it. I remember one of the things I attested to as a skill was that I drove a stick, and eat an ice cream sundae and read a Thomas Brothers guide simultaneously. And I would actually brag about that. And I remember driving, doing this with the stick and the thing, and a peanut or something dropped. And so now... and I attested it as a skill. And when... So clearly I'm talking about food. And I remember when Mrs. Fields started in Northern California, in San Francisco. And I used to travel a lot for business, and so that's how I discovered it up there. And when Mrs. Fields opened a branch in Los Angeles, I thought it was a gift from God. I literally thought that God had done it. I mean, that's how sick and twisted my thinking is. Okay. So I come to the program, and you guys... It felt good in here. Well, the first day I came, and I just cried and 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 cried. And I didn't know why I was crying, but I was comforted by what I felt here, and so I kept coming back. And you guys said things like, eat three meals a day. I understood the words, three meals a day. I understood the word, but I didn't have any idea how to do that, literally. Because I did a lot of my eating where you couldn't see it. And so my purse was like a little treasure trove of stuff, you know. And that's one of the ways I can measure my recovery is what's in my purse today. I could show you what's in my purse. I'm not even ashamed. Versus before, it was a secret cache, and I was going to save some for myself. You weren't going to get any of it, and I didn't want you to know what was in there. So I come in, you're talking about three meals a day, nothing in between. Not so much the nothing in between is that you were talking about three meals a day and stop. Which was like a concept, you know? So, because before, I just ate. See, my challenge was that I thought that when I actually ate, that I deserved to because of all the times through the day I didn't eat. Because I wanted to eat all the time, 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 lots of times, most of the time, some of the time, and I didn't. And so when I really wanted to eat, I thought I should be able to. Because I said no all those other times. And I didn't know how to endure, tolerate, operate with those uncomfortable feelings that not eating brought to the surface. I didn't know what to do with them. So I was like, and I didn't know this until I'd been in for a long time, I didn't realize that I wasn't really very mature. I was old, but I wasn't even old at that point. When I first came out, I didn't even need glasses when I first came in. When I first came in, you know, a little tiny big book, the little 164, little miniature size, I used to be able to see that. Now, even with the glasses, I don't see it so well anymore. But I didn't know how to just endure what I felt. I didn't know how to speak up. I didn't know how to shut up. I just didn't know, and I didn't know I didn't know. So I come into my sponsor suggests to me, but she asked me one day, she said, can you not eat sugar for 10 minutes? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay, so we're on the phone. So she said, okay, so call me back in 10 minutes. And I said, okay. So I hung up the phone and I was like, I literally didn't know what to do with myself. I don't know, I got busy with something, and I looked up, and 14 minutes had passed, and I survived it. And I called her back, and she said, can you do it again, another 10? And I said, yeah. And that's how I was able to stop, was 10 minutes at a time. Because I knew that I was supposed to take it one day at a time, but that was like way too big for me. I understood the idea, but I didn't know how to do it. And so she broke it down into tiny little pieces for me. So I start stepping through the steps. I get to step two, because the minute I was powerless over food, not a problem. Clearly I'm powerless over food. I was a little bit conflicted with my life became unmanageable because I was operating in a corporate world. I had this big old corporate job, and I was wearing these giant size 26 suits and operating, you know, slinging millions and stuff. But I didn't know how to sit with the feelings. So the idea that my life had become unmanageable was a little bit tougher for me to grasp for a while. But I got to step two. And I found that I needed to define a God. I grew up in a church, not one of those big preacher churches that you see on TV, not that kind. We were like a conservative, congregational sort of democratic church. And but there wasn't a closeness with God. It was about the stories. It was about community. But there wasn't anything about when you have tough feelings, call on this God to help you. That didn't come up at all. So I had to define the concept of God. And I was, people at the time, it was during the, people were sharing about goddess and higher power and different terminologies that they used for God. And none of it was really resonating with me. People would talk about praying in different ways, like, I thought I would do it wrong, so I didn't want to pray because I didn't want to do it wrong. I heard somebody talking about praying prone. Literally, she laid down and prayed prone. I thought, well, I could try that. Or should I do this way that I was taught? Or should I do, you know, sit cross-legged and do that? I wasn't sure how to do it, so I wasn't doing it. One day I heard somebody sharing about he prayed in the car, that he was driving in the car praying, and I thought, I could do that because then I don't have to worry about what to do with my hands. My hands are on the wheel. So that's how I developed my relationship with God. I had some rules about this. I would get in the car in the morning, headed to downtown L.A., hands on the wheel, up on the freeway. I can't turn the radio on until after I prayed. That was the rule. And so I started with, "Hi, God, it's me, Nancy." And to this day, every time I say, "Hi God, it's me, Nancy," of course you would fill in your own name, but it was, it resonated with me and it calmed me down and settled me down, and so it started as a casual conversation. And to this day, so I get asked just a few minutes before the meeting started to speak, and so I got nervous. And so I'm over there and I'm talking to God. Because I knew that I would be okay. But I had to get from the nervousness to okay. Like right now I feel not comfortable, but I'm okay. You know, I see lots of faces that I know, lots of people smiling back at me. Thank you so much for that, by the way. But I knew that it would be okay. And I knew that because every single time in these rooms, park or not, that I connect with what's happened for me here, it calms me down and it's okay. And I can find the humor in that. I can find the humor in the fact that I'm nervous. I can find the humor in the fact that that I started my prayer holding onto a steering wheel. You guys can enjoy that kind of silly stuff with me. That is how I got through. One of the things I like to share is that I used to have a home meeting. I shared a home meeting with somebody. And she had the terrible fortune of her husband was killed. And so she would share every week about the horror of that. Her husband was murdered. And every week she would share about that, some aspect of how her life had changed because her husband had been murdered. And every week she would share about the fact that her husband had been murdered. And every week she would share about that her husband had been killed. And then every week she would share about her husband had been killed. And then every week she would share about her husband had been killed. And every week she would share about her husband had been killed. And did I tell you that every week she would share about her husband had been killed? So every week she would share about her husband had been killed. And I had feelings about that. And she would start to share, and I would virtually roll my eyes because I knew every week she was going to share about her husband had been killed. So this went on. And she shared about it. And fast forward, I had the terrible misfortune of having a brain aneurysm. I was struck suddenly. I was unconscious Well, I didn't even know I was unconscious because I was unconscious, you know. I was in a coma for 21 days. I wasn't expected to live. And clearly that didn't work out. I mean, I lived. But it was a hell of a thing to recover from. Hell of a thing. Very difficult thing. And when I got back to meetings, every week I shared about the fact that I had a brain aneurysm. And guess what I shared about the next week? Brain aneurysm. And then the next week I would share about some element of the fact that I'd had a brain aneurysm. And then the next week I'd share about the brain aneurysm. And then the next week I'd share about the, you guessed it, the brain aneurysm. And where I got the courage and the permission and the acceptance to do that was because the lady had shared every week. And I didn't think she was helping me. I didn't think she was helping me, but guess what? She was helping me. So when you think that what you're sharing isn't helpful, or nobody wants to hear it, or something, or you shared about it last week, you shouldn't share about it again, you might not know you're helping. They might not even know you're helping. But she helped me. And I also had the good fortune of being able to thank her. But I ran into her. She's passed away now, but I ran into her, and I got to tell her. I said, let me tell you how you helped me. And it was a wonderful moment between us. So I got that from the fellowship. When I first came in, I thought the fellowship meant go to coffee with 20 people all together. That's fellowship. And I never felt comfortable with that. That was always off-putting for me. And I found that for me, the fellowship means a very, 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 very close connection with a few people, where I pick up the phone and I just start talking. I don't have to say I'm Nancy D from blah, 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 blah. They know whose voice this is. And I pick up the phone, or I grab them at the back of the park and I say, I have to share it, I'm nervous. And I just start talking and I share my heart. And they say something like, do you need to say a serenity prayer? And I say, yeah. And I say the prayer and then I come up and talk and I'm okay. So for me, the fellowship is the deep connection with a few people talking about the truth, talking about my food. When I found out that I would sooner tell you the deep details about, which I don't want to, by the way, but I would sooner tell you the deep details about my sex life than about my food, I was like, what's wrong with that picture? And so I had to get honest about that. And I'm not a thin person today, but nor am I 325 pounds. So I have to get honest about my food, and the more honest and the more willing I get, the smaller the body will be. And in the meanwhile, I'm okay. Like, I asked somebody right before, I asked John, is there a theme for the meeting, or is there, no, am I supposed to pitch anything particularly? Then it occurred to me, gratitude is Thanksgiving. So I'm grateful. So I got the habit a couple of years back of doing a gratitude list at night before I go to bed. And so let me just do a quick gratitude list. You know what shows up in that gratitude list every single day? Program. That's the one thing that's been on every single day. Because without this program, I'd be face down in a cheesecake. I mean, I just would be. And I'm not today. So what am I grateful for? I'm grateful for you guys, the smiling faces. I'm grateful for it that I had breakfast before I came. I'm grateful for I slept well last night. I'm grateful that I have plans with my family today. I'm grateful that I got through the death of my mom a couple years ago, and you guys helped me with that. I'm grateful that I'm grateful that I put on a little red top so it looks like I planned to stand before you. It didn't happen that way. I was going to wear something else, and it just worked out. I'm grateful for the simple things, like I'm grateful for a hot shower this morning. I'm grateful for, you know what, somebody asked me a couple of years ago if I would, there were some homeless women they were collecting underwear for, that the homeless community, the homeless women, don't have an underwear drawer. Everybody has a drawer with underwear, right? They don't have that. Maybe they don't only have one or none. And so, because that woman asked me that, and I cleaned out my drawer, and I had some brand new things with tags on them I'd never worn before that I gave away, I get to be grateful for underwear. Simple, basic stuff. Like, it doesn't have to be high order. I'm grateful that I have a connection with God. Well, yeah, I'm grateful for that, but I'm also grateful I have underwear. And I'm grateful that I have programs. And I'm grateful that I have you guys. I'm grateful I have humor. I'm grateful that my time is just about up. And I'm grateful to be a member of this fellowship. Thank you.
Man. Thank you, Nancy, and be sure to come back for the midnight show where Nancy will be sharing about her sex life. Our next speaker is Valerie. Valerie, are you here? Welcome, Valerie.
It's really tempting to just, like, keep walking. Is this all right, Carla? Can everybody hear me? I've been instructed to try to actually speak into this. My name's Valerie.
Hi,
guys. Thank you to all of you for being here. Thanks to Carla for asking me to be here. I'm so nervous, I just want to, like, throw up, and I'm not a bulimic, but but I do have some funny relationships with food. I actually wrote a little bit last night. I don't usually prepare to speak, but I was like, oh, 20 minutes, and like, oh, it's Thanksgiving apart, that's a big deal. It's like a really big deal. So I was just thinking about what I want to say, and you know, just kind of dovetail on what Nancy said. You know, I really was thinking about gratitude, and I had sort of a pre-weekend, spiritual weekend last weekend, and it really put me in a good space. So I'm happy to come here in that state of mind. Just to qualify for those of you, or not qualify, to introduce myself, I have been in program since 2003. I came into program as a restrictor, and that's in part why I'm really glad to be here, because I know that for me, one of the biggest struggles in my recovery and in continuing to show up to program is that having both sides of this disease can be awfully confusing. And it's taken me a long time to figure out what I'm doing here. And I say figure out in the very loosest sense of the phrase. But what I was thinking about last night is that one of the things I'm really grateful for is that I've realized or rediscovered the fact that actually I'm really, really normal. It's not that I'm a normal eater, in the sense that, you know, some people are, who are probably not sitting in this park right here with us. But I really, like, I'm really human. I really dislike being uncomfortable, really dislike it. And I really, really like sensual pleasure. And that's where food comes in. You know, it's the safest way to feel like to get a quick fix, to check out. And then the restricting side is like, well, gosh, if I feel like you're not going to like me, I'll get really, really skinny. So then at least if you don't like me, it's not about that. You know, like I can pretend that there's like one less reason for you to dislike me. So I am. I'm really grateful to have this very messy, complicated, uncomfortable, challenging sort of thing in my life because it really makes me show up. I came into program in 2003, as I said, on the restricting side of the disease, and it was suggested by a therapist that I was seeing at the time. And I thought that was crazy because I was really, really thin, like really, really, really thin, and I couldn't stop going to get carrots. Like, I could not stop, like, treading, like, a groove between my desk and the fridge to get another handful of carrots, another handful of carrots. The therapist before her had said, well, why don't you just stop? That was a good one. So I come from a long line of addicts. And so it was really challenging for me to come into these rooms because I was like, the 12 steps ruined my life. Are you kidding? My dad went into recovery, and then my parents divorced, and fuck that. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. So it was really hard. It continues to be something I have to work with when I'm here, is to understand what my relationship with me and my cravings and addictions are, independent of my family. But I knew all the language. I sat in lots of rooms with lots of alcoholics and lots of Al-Anons and lots of Alateens, like, for a really long time. So I knew the language. So I kind of felt like, I felt like I knew stuff, you know, coming in, which probably in retrospect is not a good way to come in, but I thought I knew some stuff. But at least I understood what you guys were saying, and I went to my first meeting over in Atwater. I didn't relate to 90% of the people there, and there was one woman that was in the room, and for anybody out there who, you know, has this, they'll get it. Older woman, probably, you know, I'm 10 years older now, too, but older woman, probably in her 50s, rail thin, chewing gum like she was chewing it to light all the streetlights in the city. And I was like, holy shit, that's me. You know, like, I just saw that. I saw the intensity, I saw the sadness, I saw the frailness, and I was afraid, you know? So I kept coming back, and I was just miserable. I was just so fucking miserable, and I didn't want to be miserable. And I really didn't know how to not be miserable. I still don't know how to not be miserable most days, but I'm getting better at being miserable. And I think that's the shift, is, like, I'm not trying to not be miserable anymore. I really heard what Nancy said before me, and that is, you know, like, sitting with those feelings and really just welcoming the pain of what it is to be alive, because that's what I struggle against, you know? Like, I use food because I don't want to hurt. I restrict because I don't want to be rejected, so I think it's going to keep me from being rejected. But it doesn't work. So, my sort of trajectory through this thing for 10 years, I've messed up a lot. I don't know a lot. I continue to, like, you know, I continue to screw up, and I just, like, I want to say that out loud. That's sort of like a new practice for me, is that I get to fail big. Like, I get to fail really big, I get to fuck up, I get to totally screw things up, and still show up, and still show up, and still show up. I gained a lot of weight in program, like, for better or worse. I kind of, like, I knew how to binge before I got here, because when you starve yourself, that's sort of like a natural thing. Like, it's instinctual. You get to learn how to binge. But, like, I really learned how to binge in these rooms because I heard other people share about, like, well, then I went to that drive-thru and that drive-thru and that drive-thru, and I was like, holy shit, you can do that? Had a lot of experimentation with that. That was fun. You know, it brought me to some new depths. So that was good. But, you know, I hit my highest weight in program, and I hit my lowest weight in program. And then a few years ago, and I generally have always worked with a sponsor. Thank God. Like, that was the first time I had felt unconditional love, and that was really why I kept coming back, because I was like, holy shit, there's somebody who, like, will take my blubbering in the middle of the night calls about what I just ate or what I don't want to eat, or, you know, what you said, or, you know, whatever it was. So I kind of kept coming back for the love. Most recently, I don't like to use the word relapse, because it sort of, to me, implies, like, I had it and then I lost it. And for me, that's not how this works. Like, there's no, like, I had it. There's, like, an everyday, like, how am I relating to all of these different things? But a few years ago, I got into a relationship, and I naturally dropped a lot of weight because I was just in love. And, like, frankly, I mean, it's still true. Like, if I have a lot of love, I don't need as much food. Not so much. I'm working with that. But I dropped a lot of weight, and then I really hung on to the weight, like, losing, having lost the weight. I didn't want to gain it back. And so I, you know, got down to a weight that I never thought I would be at again, which was, like, the weight that I was at when I came into program. Somewhere in the, you know, like, 105-ish pound range, which is, for someone who's 5'7", is pretty low. So there I was again. And really was stuck in it. Like, really, really, really was stuck in it. And I stuck in being stuck in it. God bless my sponsors, by the way. through that period. Like, I can't believe that they stuck with me. Like, talk about unconditional love, because I was fighting it. And I was like, I don't want this. Like, I've been in program, 7 years. Why the fuck is this happening? I don't want this. But here I am.